Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Passage of Power is the fourth volume in Robert A. Caro's landmark biography of Lyndon B. Hallage Johnson, focusing on the dramatic transition from the end of the Eisenhower era to the aftermath of John F. Kennedy's assassination and Johnson's first months as president. Built from extensive reporting and interviews widely discussed in coverage of Caro's multi-decade project, and the book examines how Johnson moved from frustration and marginalization as vice president to commanding authority in the White House. Caro is known for tracing power through institutions, personalities, and the often hidden mechanics of government, and this volume places that method inside one of the most consequential handovers in American history. The narrative connects high-level political strategy with the pressures of grief, legitimacy, and national security, showing how Johnson worked to stabilize the country while also pursuing his own legislative ambitions. It is both a political history and a study of leadership under extreme constraint. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the vice presidency as a political dead end. A central theme is how the vice presidency can reduce even a dominant political figure to near irrelevance. Johnson entered the role after mastery of the Senate, where his feel for procedure, favors, and leverage made him extraordinarily effective. In the vice presidency, however, he faced structural limits and personal exclusion. Carroll emphasizes the distance between formal titles and real influence, showing how proximity to the presidency does not guarantee participation in decisions. The book explores Johnson's attempts to carve out purpose through committees, foreign travel, and policy initiatives, and how these efforts often met resistance or indifference. This period also highlights the psychological impact of power denied. Johnson's drive, competitive instincts, and need for recognition collided with an administration that had its own inner circle and priorities. By detailing this confinement, the narrative sets up the later transformation. The same man who could not get meetings or shape policy as vice president would soon have to wield presidential authority instantly and convincingly. The contrast underlines Caro's larger argument that power is not merely possessed, it is granted by systems and by other people. Secondly, Kennedy, Johnson, and the machinery of the White House. The book examines the operating style of the Kennedy administration and the way staff networks can define access to the president. Caro's account is attentive to how gatekeeping works in practice, who controls information flow, who frames choices, and who is invited into decisive conversations. Johnson's relationship with Kennedy is shown as complex, shaped by political necessity, regional calculations, and personal wariness. Within that environment, Johnson often found himself outside the core circle, facing not only bureaucratic barriers but also cultural and generational differences. Caro uses this setting to illustrate that the presidency is not just one person's will. It is an ecosystem of advisors, rivalries, and routines that can either amplify or neutralize a leader. The topic also illuminates how narrative and public image interact with governance. The Kennedy years are portrayed as a period of strong messaging and high expectations, yet also of internal tensions and unresolved priorities. Understanding these dynamics matters because Johnson inherits not a blank slate but an existing system with its loyalties and suspicions. The challenge is not only to become president in law, but to become president in fact by reshaping the machinery around him. Thirdly, the assassination and the instant burden of legitimacy. The transition following Kennedy's assassination forms the emotional and institutional heart of the book. Caro focuses on the immediate problem. Johnson faced the nation's shock and fear, the need for continuity, and the scrutiny surrounding a successor who had been politically weakened just days before. In such moments, every gesture becomes a signal. The narrative emphasizes how legitimacy is constructed through actions that reassure the public, calm allies, and deter adversaries. Johnson's decisions about timing, protocol, and communication are presented as tools for stabilizing the country and the government. This topic also covers the human dimension grief within the administration, the presence of Jacqueline Kennedy, and the atmosphere of crisis that surrounded the swearing-in in early hours. Caro treats the event not as a single dramatic scene, but as a cascade of decisions under uncertainty. The assassination tests whether Johnson can project steadiness and authority while navigating suspicion and factionalism. It also reveals the limits of power, since the new president must operate amid investigations, security anxieties, and global tensions. The book argues that in this passage of power, survival of democratic continuity depends on practical leadership as much as on constitutional text. Fourthly, reclaiming power through Congress and procedure. Once in office, Johnson's most distinctive advantage is his deep understanding of Congress and his ability to translate urgency into legislative movement. Caro highlights how Johnson used knowledge of personalities, committee structures, and procedural leverage to build momentum. The book portrays lawmaking as a craft counting votes, shaping narratives, timing announcements, and applying pressure in ways that remain within the bounds of persuasion rather than command. This topic also shows how Johnson reframed continuity with Kennedy as both a moral imperative and a strategic weapon. By tying legislative goals to the fallen president's legacy, he gained leverage over hesitant lawmakers and created a unifying purpose during a period of mourning. Caro's broader point is that effective governance depends on choosing arenas where one's skills matter. Johnson could not dominate the White House inner circle as vice president, but as president, he could draw the center of gravity toward Congress, where he was strongest. The discussion illustrates how power can be accumulated through mastery of process, not merely through ideology. It also reveals costs, the intensity of pressure, the transactional nature of politics, and the ethical questions that arise when results are pursued with relentless force. Lastly, civil rights and the moral stakes of presidential action. The book places civil rights at the center of Johnson's early presidency, presenting it as a test of will, strategy, and moral imagination. Caro explores the political obstacles that made civil rights legislation difficult, including regional opposition, Senate rules, and the risk of fracturing party coalitions. Against that backdrop, Johnson's choices become a study in how presidents decide which battles to fight and how to frame them. The narrative emphasizes that progress required both public leadership and behind-the-scenes maneuvering, combining speeches that appeal to national values with hard bargaining that moved votes. This topic also engages the question of personal transformation versus political calculation, a recurring issue in assessments of Johnson. Caro does not reduce the story to a simple motive instead. He shows how ambition, empathy, history, and opportunity can intersect. The civil rights struggle in the book is not an abstract policy debate, but a national confrontation with injustice, requiring presidents to risk political capital in order to change law. By examining Johnson's approach, Caro highlights the difference between symbolic support and operational commitment. The theme reinforces the book's central idea: power is most consequential when used to affect the lives of people who have the least of it. In conclusion, this book is best for readers who want to understand how American power actually transfers hands, especially those interested in presidential leadership, congressional strategy, and the moral pressures of crisis governance. Students of history, political science, journalism, and law will benefit, but so will general readers who want a vivid account of how institutions behave when the country is frightened and uncertain. The passage of power can improve a reader's life by sharpening practical judgment about leadership, how legitimacy is built, how teams and gatekeepers shape outcomes, and how effective action often depends on mastering process rather than relying on titles. It also offers a deeper way to think about ambition and responsibility, showing how personal drive can be directed toward public outcomes, for better or worse. Compared with many single-volume studies of the Kennedy and Johnson years, Caro's work stands out for its investigative depth and its focus on the mechanics behind famous moments, not just the moments themselves. The book ties character to consequence and explains why certain choices moved legislation while others stalled. If you want a richly reported, analytically rigorous narrative that connects personal power to national change, this volume is worth buying and reading closely. If you would like to support Robert A. Caro, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.